Hi, and welcome to Wine with Meg and Mel. We're here to help you navigate the world of wine. I'm Mel Gilchrist, I'm my master of wine, Meg Brotman. Meg, what have we got this week?
This week we're doing Spain that's not Rioja.
And why specifically not Rioja?
Because everyone knows Rioja.
Yeah.
It's had a big sunshine moment forever. And I just thought we'd look at some other interest areas. In the past, we've done a bit of Spanish varietals, but we haven't actually talked about the regions much. So I just thought we'd talk a little bit about different regions so that you're drinking across the spectrum.
Okay, we love it. Before we start, what have you been drinking?
So André Clouet is a champagne producer and he produces these wines called the Dreams wines, the Dreams vintages. So he is 100% Pinot. He's in Boozy and he only has Pinot. So he buys in some Chardonnay. He swaps some Chardonnay and makes it every year. It's called the Dream. So I had a 2016 and I didn't realise that that's what he did. I was talking to someone and they said, oh, we don't know whether he takes the grape, whether he takes the wine already bottled. We don't know whether he takes it as juice and then tirages it himself or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's like a little swapsies, which happens all the time in the wine industry. So, yeah, I just thought that was a really cute wine. It was bloody delicious, 2016
And you
vintage.
Can buy it here?
Yes, it was on special at the Prince.
Okay, awesome. And what's your fun fact?
My fun fact is I know that you've been talking about all the TikTok you groovers been using jalapenos in rosé.
Mm-hmm.
A woman's actually made a rosé that she's put her spicy sauce into in the winemaking somewhere in America. So she's made the, I think it's called St. Sally's or something. She's made like a spicy sauce and she's actually fermented the rosé.
That is so gross.
So it's taking spicy rosé, which apparently is having a bit of a cool moment, to next level.
That's disgusting.
I'd like to try
it. I want to try it too.
Have you done the jalapeno thing?
No, I was actually, I've been meaning to do it for you. I was going to do it before I told you that it was a trend. I was just going to be like, taste this.
But you do just like, do you steep the wine in the jalapeno or you just
literally
pop it,
just like pop it
like
in?
Garnish.
Like throw them in.
Yeah, I don't know what the point is.
Yeah. I mean, spicy. Maybe. Oh. Like, I love a spicy mug. So I don't know. Maybe the people are onto something. And to be fair, cocaine was pretty good.
And to be fair, it might make rosé interesting.
Okay, on that fabulous note, let's get into Spain. Where are we starting?
So we're going to start in the northwest of Spain, so kind of closer to the border of Portugal.
Okay.
So a little bit cooler because it's at higher elevation, can be a little bit wetter as well because some parts are near Galicia, which is in the northern part of Spain, and it rains a lot. So Vina Verde is the Portuguese side of Galicia. If any of you know San Sebastian with the one where the pilgrimage ends? Anyway, I've got Rueda. So this is a Verdejo. Now, I think we did an episode on – no, we didn't do an episode on this.
We've done it recently.
Have we done this?
Yeah.
I can't remember. Anyway, 2021, Rueda Verdejo for me is a great variety that's fresh and citrus but has often that little phenolic grip to it.
And
I think that that's because it's a cheaper region.
Yeah.
And so that they are trying to extract as much possible juice as they can out of the grapes. Usually about 13% alcohol, no barrel ferment, crisp white wine. My sister was recently around this area and she'd always thought of Spain being hot and only for reds.
Yeah.
And she was amazed at how delicious the whites were from this region. She fell in love with Chocolate, but
great
yeah,
whites.
They are really good. And this is cheap. It's the Marques de Risco.
Yeah.
De Riscal, sorry. It's probably $17-ish.
I would like to take this moment to remind everyone that Verdejo and Verdalo are two different things.
Mm-hmm.
So not to be confused.
Did we do Verdelo then?
Yeah, maybe we did Verdelo. So Verdelo is way more common in Australia. Verdejo is the Spanish one.
Yeah, it's one of these wines. You know, we talked about the Italian whites a few weeks ago that it's just fresh and crisp and saline and citrus and it's a drink it, don't think about it, chill it right down, have it with your classic jamon or octopus or even a seafood paella. I know you're in a different region. I love these sorts of wines as we go into summer. You know, last week we had the Patricia Chardonnay, which is all about thinking about it and layers of texture. And each time you taste it, it's got something different because it's an iconic wine. This is not that.
No, it's not.
But it's beautiful quality. It delivers exactly what I want it to do. I'm not having high expectations.
Yum.
But it's distinctly Verdejo, isn't it? It's not.
Yep.
It's not. It couldn't really be anything else.
Man, I would just be so happy with a nice chilled glass of that on a warm day. That is freaking delightful. That's worth trying.
And, you know, you're having the baby soon. Post-baby, this is the sort of thing when your baby's gone to sleep, you're not breastfeeding anymore. It's a Friday afternoon or a Thursday afternoon. Mummy just sits down and has a glass of wine because she can't have anything too alcoholic or whatever. Yep. Little glass of that.
Is it lower in alcohol?
It's 13%. It's not hugely alcoholic, but it doesn't feel alcoholic. It's
nice and light.
Nice and light. It's the sort of thing that you could have at lunchtime. Real all-rounder. So, Rueda, it's a white wine.
$17.
It is 17. It's very cheap. Yes.
Now, do you want to talk about the ode to the cage on the outside?
Well, that's a you thing.
Oh, is that a me one to explain?
Isn't that from Rioja?
Yeah, is it? It was,
I didn't even notice it.
So the more expensive bottles now, normally Grand Reservas have them. But back in Spain, they had a lot of counterfeit bottles back in the day. And so people would buy a bottle, uncork it, drink the lovely wine and then fill it up with crap, cork it again and try and resell it. So what they ended up doing is putting cages over the bottles.
So buy a cage. Explain what you mean, because it's not literally a cage. It's like it's like chain mail.
Yeah.
Like the night suits, but it fits it's form-fitting over the bottle.
Yeah,
and then they seal it at either end.
Yep. And so you know if it's broken that it's not the right bottle. And a lot of Spanish wineries have odes to this now. So Grand Reserves.
So why don't we do it anymore?
Still, well, because I don't know, we've got a more civilized society where it's much less common to have counterfeit bottles, especially for like the $40 ones, I suppose. Although, great documentary, Sour Grapes, if you're interested in counterfeit bottles. Have you not seen it, May?
Is that the one about Rudy Kernowan?
Yeah. Have you ever seen the
documentary? I have seen it, but I don't remember.
Fantastic.
On that, Rebecca Gibb, I think her name is, she's a master of wine, has just published a book about wine fraud.
Oh, that's cool.
So I might get that for my fun facts because it's just a whole book about them. I did not even notice that, but you can, when you look at the label, it does look like it's got a fine metallic line just across the label, obviously not across the bottle. But I do remember, you know, buying wines and you'd pull it off. I guess it's sustainability, it's single use, you're just going to throw it away. But they do look pretty amazing.
They look pretty
and
cool.
And so, yes, Mel says there's an ode to it. I don't know that people would be faking the Verdejo, though, from Rueda.
Well, yeah. I mean, this bottle, it's also just like it's on the label. It's not across the whole bottle. You're not sure it's necessary on this bottle. But, hey, great wine. Everyone should try it. This is a really good one for your next warm weekend.
Now we're pretty much moving across, it's the same latitude, to Ribera del Duero. This is more higher altitude than Verdejo, but it's the same latitude than Rueda. This is the home of Albariño. Now, we've had Albariño many times, but I just thought we'd revisit it in sense of its place. So it's
always worth revisiting Albariño.
Exactly. It's quite an aromatic white grape variety, high levels of acidity, medium minus bodied. You know, in the WSET, it does appear quite frequently. Students kind of can't get their head around it because it is quite identifiable, I think, because it is quite aromatic. It's got a floral character. And some people mistake it for Torontes in Argentina, but acids are going to be different. It's got a higher level of acidity than Torontes and not that sort of muscaty. So this is Pulpo from the Riespacious region, which is basically, same latitude. Did I say Ribera del Duero? Yes, I was getting ahead of myself. Sorry.
Yeah, you're jumping around.
I'm jumping around because I've been looking at the other one. it's called Pulpo, which means octopus, and don't think we've had this one.
No.
So it's Pagos del Rey. So Pago in Spanish is parcel.
Huh.
So a pargo is down to single vineyard. Okay. But this is Pargos del. Putting it straight into the spittoon, not preempting what Mel might think of it. Pargos del Rey just means vineyards of the king. So I'd say in this area, in this instance, it is a marketing tool.
Yep.
What do they say? It's from various parcelas selected in the Rio Baixas area. White flowers, peach and apricot, fresh and fruity with a long aftertaste, served well chilled. So Rio Baixas is up, you know, it's further north. I love it.
Do you remember a few weeks ago I used the tasting note fresh laundry or like just come out of the washing machine? That's what I get in this one.
It smells like washing powder.
It does.
And that's so you it's can see how people can confuse it with Torontes from Argentina. But on the palate, usually it's the acid's higher unless, you know, salta in Argentina. Oh, yeah, it's lovely. That's and to so have yum. That with barbecued octopus would be absolutely delicious. Oh, Mel's just pulling apart the microphones. How much?
23. It's nothing. It's so good.
So this is the thing about Spain, and I think when we were talking, we were doing our planning, that Dan said that they're actually bringing in some more interesting Spanish wines. I don't know when, but when they do, we might get in one of their specialists to talk to us through the new wines, because I think Spain had a moment a few years ago and then it sort of disappeared. You know, everyone was on the Mencia bandwagon and we don't have that today.
Menthia bandwagon. I don't know what it is. I've only just heard of Menthia this year, people making it as a single varietal.
Well, it was funny. We had the diploma graduation dinner on Wednesday night and Andrew Shedden, who works at Dan Murphy, said, I was going to get a Menthia for you, Meg. Shit, he didn't, thank God. So, yeah, Albarino. We have it in Australia.
Yep.
We obviously famously thought we had Albarino and it turns out to be Sauvignon. So, but there is Australian versions of Albarino. It has a chalkiness to the palate that I really like.
I find, though, that just the Australian versions do always they're just made in such an Australian style. We just love fruit. We love fresh fruit. And these Spanish ones just have a little more of an edge to them.
Yeah, and texture. This is a thing. That I think Spanish whites have texture because of it's very simple white wine making to start with.
Yep.
But their palates have adapted to that. So now they actually chase that texture. We still have a little bit of a fear of phenolic bite in white wines.
No, we shouldn't.
We think that they should not have any level of bitterness or phenolicness in the wines. And I just disagree. I mean, more and more with Riesling, you're seeing people are giving a little bit of grunt to their wines. And particularly Australia is one of the greatest food nations on the planet. We have everything.
Yeah.
We can grow everything. We have great produce. We embrace all different styles of food. You can get go to any restaurant anywhere in a major city.
Yep.
And so we need texture in our wines, our white wines, and it's hot. It's a hot climate.
I could not agree with you more. It's like we've gotten too good at winemaking. We just want it so clean and so perfect, but these have this amazing texture and kind of like a richness that often is a bit harder to find.
And makes you want to have another glass. It makes you want to actually eat something. And I think that this is where the natural winemaking, I'm using inverted commas, natural winemaking was done as a counterpoint to that.
Yeah.
I don't want to say simplicity, but just almost one-dimensional fruit-driven styles of wine. They said, well, it doesn't always have to be. What I would say to the natural winemakers is faults are faults, no matter what you're doing, boys and girls, everyone's doing it. But adding in texture, full skins is interesting to me. So
totally agree.
Two whites.
These are $17 and $23, both great examples for your weekend.
And buy them, you know, as current vintage as you can. So 21s, 22s. I'm just trying to see what the Albarino is. And what's really lovely is they've put Albarino on the front label rather than Rear Spacious.
Oh, that is helpful.
And the same with the Spanish. They've got Verdejo yeah. and then Rueda underneath. So it's educating you.
Yeah.
But it's also helping you because, oh, I used to like that grape variety.
Yep.
They're both 2021 wines.
Awesome.
Delish. So now we're going to Grenache.
Grenache.
We're going north of Rioja
Grenache.
To Navarra.
Ah.
So different soil type. Doesn't have the elevation, but it's still on the, well, it's on the Navarra River and it still makes these beautiful fruit driven styles of wine.
Mm.
This is called Baja Viñas, Viñas Viejas Baja Montaña. So it's old vine, bottom of the mountain or lower mountain. So foothills.
I can't even figure out what this label called Arquitu.
Orquitu, Orquitu, yeah.
You speak Spanish, you should know.
Yeah, but this could be Catalan.
Oh, I forget that that's a thing.
So you know how they spell Garnacha with a T and an X and a C around there? I'm not sure. So Viñas Viejas in 2019. So this is a Navarra's it's a red winemaking region. It's got Grenache. It's got Tempranillo. It's Rioja. Rioja on special. It's cheaper. They're not as obsessed with they have Reserva and Gran Reserva, but they're not as obsessed with making, you know, wines for longevity. They are much more into having wines that can be drunk. Now, very old vines. There's a lot of bush vine around here, unirrigated sites.
Yeah.
So I imagine this is quite high in alcohol. This is 13.5.
It's not too bad for a Grenache.
Hmm.
That's pretty nice.
But again, Grenache, I'm expecting from Australia, strawberries
yep.
and raspberries and bubblegum. This has baked earth,
yep.
strawberry definitely, but more of a muddled, mushed
like
strawberry
a darker, yeah.
characteristic. You know when yeah. they're a bit bruised and they've been sitting yep. in your fridge for a little while, so yep. they're just not quite pristine strawberries. Yep. I've got this lovely baked earth character.
It's definitely more earthy, more savoury.
Yeah, it's just – but it finishes with that lovely strawberry sort of jam lift.
Yeah, it does. And the tannins are quite nice in it as well.
So Navarra's one to look out for. Navarra is like kind of like Rioja mm. in terms of – this is 100% Garnacha. And the other thing is now the Spanish are telling us what's in their wines. So this is a Garnacha from the Navarra DO. Great variety first. Region second.
Yeah.
Just so that people can get educated. I think that's the reason that they do it. It helps them sell it because not everyone knows what grape varieties of Navarra is made from.
I mean, I like it, but it doesn't excite me. It's objectively good, but it's...
It's good. It's something I probably wouldn't buy again, but then I know a lot of people that would love that style
yeah, that's
of
true.
Wine because it has got the distinct strawberryness, but there's that baked earth character as well mm. that they like and that they would love to have with salty foods and
yeah.
things. Nice, but, yes, it doesn't blow your socks off.
No.
So now okay. we're moving to Priorat. Priorat is closer towards, if you're looking at a map of Spain, it's sort of on the right-hand side, closer towards the coast. It is famous for these Yicaria soils.
Oh, my gosh.
So it's like a layered slate soil.
Okay.
Grenache, Carignan, they can blend. There's also Shiraz and Merlot planted here. So about 20-odd years ago, really small mm-hmm. DO, and they started deciding, well, they can't really expand the region because it is quite small, so they were going to concentrate on doing quality. And they all, as a collective, all the different producers said, we're going to do quality. So they're now a DOCA, so they're a Denominación Origen Calificada.
Yes.
So they got themselves upgraded from a DO.
So there's only two in Spain that have that.
Yeah.
And it's them and Rioja.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
how long ago did they get themselves upgraded?
Probably 10 years ago-ish.
Rioja's had it forever, right?
Yeah, but I think Rioja was the OG and yep. for a long time the only one.
Yeah.
But definitely now, I mean, Ribera del Duero should be getting up there pre-rat. The wines are amazing. They're long-lived. Some of you may have heard of Telmo Rodriguez, produces mm-hmm. amazing wines. When I was there in the late 1990s, early 2000s, they were just starting their revolution, and they were really unsure. They knew that they were sitting on amazing dry grown bush vine,
yeah,
fabulous fruit,
yeah,
steep terraces, there's amazing soils, but they didn't quite know how to do it. And thankfully, everyone sort of, the Spanish government put a little bit of money in for promotion for them. So from Priorat, I expect it's usually Grenache dominant, more depth than a normal Grenache like the Navarra. The Navarra was quite simple. I expect more depth. I often see some blue-tinged fruits, and I suspect that that's from, because they can blend with Carignan or Carignan.
Yeah.
They can blend with other international grape varieties. I think that's from some of the blend, because it's not the dominant thing, but you don't see strawberry jam.
There's a lot going on in here. It's got a really complex nose.
Definitely oak in there.
Yeah, it's got like that licorice, but it's got that baked earth as well.
It is definitely licorice. It's like chocolate-coated licorice.
Yeah, it is too. So I also just looked at the vintage because some of the fruit smells a bit dried.
And?
18.
And alcohol, 14%.
Oh, I haven't got that
for you. You can smell the alcohol on this wine, I reckon.
Mm.
These are wines, you can feel it, that need time in the cellar. They need time to sit down, come together. The tannins for me are a little out of place at the moment because they're too young.
I don't know.
You like that?
Oh, I weirdly do. It's so not the kind of thing I would normally like, and I weirdly like it.
I love them. I find them, like I said, there's that blue fruit and perfume, but it's just a tinge that keeps me really interested. This one for me is a little bit dried fruit, high alcohol.
And the tannin is a bit, I see what you mean. Yeah.
But also, I would never open a Priorat and just taste it. I would be having a special meal if I was having something Priorat. How much was this? I don't think this was too hideously expensive.
It's 37. That tastes, I would have guessed higher. Like, it's got so much complexity to it. It's got a really lovely finish.
Yeah, it's a beautiful, beautiful one. In a region, I mean, buy one. It's called RAR, R-A-R, Priorat RAR, Dominicale de Origen Calificada, Van Singular Essentia. Love the label. No?
It's not. Okay, this is silly of me, but I like Spanish wines to look a little Spanish. You know, when you buy Spanish wine.
Oh, like with this, the Marques de Riscal with the, no, I love that. And the pulpo and also the Kitu, whatever it's called.
I don't know. It looks like the Matrix. I don't know about the label, but the wine is really good. And if you are a fan of a more powerful style red, then you'll really enjoy it.
But please don't do this and just take it home and glug it. It needs cook something.
And decant probably.
Yeah. Well, it's unfined and unfiltered, so there could be sediment in there as well.
Yeah.
You know what it looks like? Did you do the Melbourne Rain Room? Have you done the Rain Room?
No.
Okay. If you look up in the Rain Room before you step in, it kind of looks like all the jets.
Don't you think it looks like the Matrix? It's like...
Yeah, it does look like the Matrix for the Rain Room. So that's Spain, that's not Rioja.
So quick recap on the regions. Go. Well, you've got whitey mouth.
I've confined you to the northern part of the country. We're starting on the western side near Portugal.
Yep.
Cooler. Higher elevation. Go there for whites.
Yep.
Castilla y León, biggest wine growing region in the whole of Spain. But look to Rueda and Rio Spacious for white wine.
Cool.
We then moved over a little further towards the coast. We've got just north of Rioja, Navarra.
Mm-hmm.
Dry grain, Shiraz, lovely wines, but simpler. Not as much oak, fruit driven.
Yep.
Then Priorat, serious winemaking, you're going to be paying a little bit higher price. Grenache-led blends, but they can put other things into them. Nice. And seriously good wines, but they need food.
Yep, seriously good. Great. Well, good tasting. We'll finish it there for this week, but what have we got next week again?
No, we've got old wines. Well, Yolumba have sent us all the wines, and so we've got bush vine versus old vine versus blah, blah, blah. So
that'll be fun. Yeah. See the difference.
A bit of difference.
Cool. Well, until then, enjoy your next glass of wine.
And drink well.